Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamma. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad you're with me today. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Howdy.
You know, I love good howdy. Today, the first thing I wanted to talk about, actually with you, John, was some hard details we got yesterday. Yesterday, after the media event, we had a quick discussion, sort of the overview of the stuff that we saw. But one thing that caught my eye, and I know yours, was that we finally got some hard details about Apple TV, including, or TV Plus, when it's going to launch, and almost the more important bit of information, how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, launch is November 1st, 12 days before Disney Plus, and it is at a great price, $4.99 a month. This is at the very low end of the spectrum. This is even less than Hulu with ads at $5.99 a month, less than CBS All Access at $5.99 a month with commercials, and less than Disney $6.99 a month, which we thought was a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. So my take on this is that Apple recognized that they didn't have a whole lot of content. As Tim Cook said during the event, when he was talking about Apple TV Plus, that there would be certain shows that would be launched on November 1st and more would be added each month, mm-hmm. which is a kind of an indirect face-saving way of saying, well, we don't have a whole lot of content. It was for starters, but starting November 1st and the months afterwards, we'll be adding content every month to mm-hmm. the little content we had to launch.
Yeah.
And, I was hoping, by the way, that he would say, we don't have a lot of content because it turns out all those stupid notes I send slow things down.
So this is a very pleasing price, and it's going to be free if you buy a new Apple device, any Apple device at all, even an iPod Touch.
Yeah, you get a free year.
How, exactly how that's going to happen, I don't know. But I imagine that when you, as Brian suggested, take it away, Brian.
I think that was actually Kelly that suggested it. I'm happy to take credit, though.
Upon registration?
Yeah, that you probably, it'll probably be just a digital button you click.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a digital transaction that goes with signing in with your Apple ID or something like that, or registering the device to your iCloud account you can use the Find My and whatever. That was my take on it. I liked your idea of somebody just tucking a coupon into every box. That made me happy.
Can you imagine that? Like Steve Jobs would come back from his grave and just start like just laying
slapping people's hands.
Steve doesn't like
it was really funny. Now the thing I want to point out is we were all pretty convinced that TV Plus was going to be $10 a month. Like, we basically wrote that in pen.
Except for I was convinced it would be more than $10 a month.
Oh, that's true. Well, at a minimum.
There was that leak about 3 weeks ago from sources. I forget who sourced mm-hmm. the Apple sources, but not in Bloomberg, who said that they were trial ballooning $9.99 a month. Yeah. And that got me into a fever. And I wrote my big article about Apple TV not going to be $9.99 a month.
Well, and when we first talked about it, you know, especially in light of the Disney investor event where we first got some hard details about their service, you know, we kept going, well, if they're going to do it for $7 a month, how is Apple's $10 a month going to compete when they're not Disney?
Well, and the funny thing about it is we all said it, and then we kind of sort of suspected that Apple would ignore us.
Well, yeah.
But Apple didn't ignore the reality of the situation and kind of faced up to the situation, which I thought was kind of neat.
Now, ignoring me and ignoring the reality of the situation, I think, are two different things, just for the record.
So I spent quite a bit of effort yesterday pointing out that John was much more correct than me mm-hmm. when we were talking about pricing. But one of the things I did that I didn't mention but has been on my mind is how does it compare to pay $5 a month for video and $10 a month for music? Like, should I be being a little pissy about paying $10 a month for music?
Well, how many songs are in the Apple Music Library? Aren't there about Well, tens of thousands, 60,000.
That's probably the point upon which Apple would pivot this question, because, really? Well, because the music is all of the music. It's not really all the music, but it's effectively all of the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if Apple was offering all of the videos, or even a large subset of the videos, a la Netflix, in other words, mm-hmm. not just their own content,
mm-hmm.
that would probably better serve as a comparison to Apple Music. But since it's only Apple's content, and since it's only launching with a few shows, I think he didn't. Wasn't it three?
Five
shows in November. Yeah. In November, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So since it's only five shows and it's not a bunch of third party content too, mm-hmm. that probably doesn't make the comparison all that apt.
I think it's a different comparison.
I have a theory about this, Kelly.
Okay, let's hear it.
My theory is that when Apple News came out and Apple Music came out, Apple was thinking, we need to maximize our services revenue, and where our take is that this is what people will pay for all the music and pay for high quality curated news. And then the situation with Disney came along and blew their $9.99 pricing model out of the water. And so they said, well, we have to do $4.99 to be credible with Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. And I think that trickled into the decision about how to price Arcade as well.
Possibly. My take on it is that, and let me finish, Brian, before you sigh deeply and roll your eyes, or at least just do it where I can't hear you. These are two very different products, because I use Apple Music all the time. I listen to music in the car. I listen to music in the kitchen while I'm cleaning the kitchen or making dinner, or, while I'm doing stuff in the yard, like when I'm mowing the grass, I have like a special Apple Music playlist for mowing the yard because it's at a certain speed so that I can walk behind the mower to the beat and that's fine. And like I do all of these things with Apple Music while I'm doing other stuff. When I sit down and watch TV, I'm watching TV. So if I sit down to watch Netflix, I'm watching Netflix. Sometimes maybe I'm watching Netflix and having a meal, or I have something on, like I'm rewatching, you know, and maybe I'm doing a little bit of something else. But for the most part, like my attention is primarily dedicated to a screen, and I'm staring at the screen while I'm watching Netflix. Like I'm not watching Netflix while I drive. I'm not watching Netflix while I'm mowing the lawn. That's not what's happening.
Just being an isolated experience, though, doesn't change the value proposition. It just changes the mechanics of what you're doing.
Well, I would probably get twice as much use out of Apple Music as I would TV Plus, even if TV Plus had a lot of stuff, because I can use Apple Music in conjunction with doing many, many other activities, and that's not necessarily the case with watching TV.
Does that intrinsically make it more valuable?
To me, yes.
Is that the metric on which we decide how valuable a service is? How often we can use it? I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
It's not a metric I would use. It's certainly legitimate for Kelly or anyone else to use that metric.
Yeah, I'm just philosophizing.
The metric in my head is production cost. I mean, like, there's a lot more money that's going into even just Apple shows than goes into music production every year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. ROI. Certainly ROI is not coming into this, because at $4.99 a month, it's going to take decades.
And that's only for the suckers that are paying $4.99 a month, because everybody who's buying new stuff this week is getting it for free. And we'll talk about buying new stuff in a minute.
So here's the more important question, Kelly. Is Stay Alive the song you use for mowing your lawn?
No, I have a wide variety of them. There are no Bee Gees.
That's the perfect pace.
It is. Yes. It's not there now. I will probably add it now that we've had this conversation.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yes. So I do have, I have songs for, and I've probably overthought it a lot, because mowing the front yard is a different process than the backyard. So I have kind of different speeds of music that are in there. So, now that everybody knows about my mowing habits, we should probably move on and talk about our sponsor this week. And everyone can go take a good look at that. I think I have a public playlist on Apple Music. So go enjoy what I listen to while I mow the lawn. I look forward to your letters. Not really. our sponsor today is My Wall Street. And, you know, something that a lot of people do is try to invest in the stock market. And when you are investing in the stock market, it's very easy to look for information to make sure you're making good decisions, get really overwhelmed with that with that information, because everybody has an opinion about it, and then just give up. That's where My Wall Street can save the day. They offer you a short list of stocks that their investors have spent hours and hours researching. Some of those have grown even fivefold since they made it on the list. My Wall Street is not a brokerage, so they are more interested in helping you with some advice and some guidance in order to help you make those good decisions and not just take your money. As a TDO listener, you can get access to the entire My Wall Street app, all of the guidance, all of the advice, all of the things to help you make those good decisions. You get that free for 30 days as a TDO listener instead of the usual 7. The way you do that is to go to mywallstreet.com/TDO, mywallst.com/TDO, and download their app now, and you can access everything for a month, like I said, instead of a week. And once you've gotten in there, decided this is the thing that you want to do, you can continue down that path for $9.99 a month. And we'd like to thank My Wall Street for sponsoring the show today. Our other topic today, like I said, is going to be new hardware. And one of the things about the new hardware is it turns out there are various values of new when it comes to some of this. So John was saying this morning that he's considering buying a new iPad. And was debating which iPad, and it turns out there are some really compelling reasons why you might want something that wasn't announced yesterday. Right, John?
Right. I have an iPad Mini 3. It's not going to run iOS 13. And so I was thinking, yay, when the new iPad Mini 5 came out, that I would just automatically replace it and I'd be up and running. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, gee, look at this price on the new 10.2-inch iPad that Apple just announced yesterday. It's only $329 compared to the iPad Mini, $399. So in the pre-show this morning, or in the morning meeting, we started talking about the ins and outs of the new 8th-generation iPad versus the iPad Mini 5. And it turns out there's some startling and annoying compromises you have to make. The iPad announced yesterday has an A10X Fusion CPU, whereas the iPad Mini 5 has an A12. Mm-hmm. The iPad Mini has 64 gigabytes for starters. The iPad 8th generation starts at 32 gigabytes. So for $329, you only get 32. I don't think 32 is enough anymore. I try to do at least 64 gigabytes in all my iPads. So now all of a sudden you're faced with a really tough compromise. Do you want the slick small screen and the fast processor? They both have Apple Pencil support. Mm-hmm. And 64 gig RAM, and it's going to cost you $399, or do you want to go on the cheap and spend $329 and get a 2-year-old processor and get and be faced with having to upgrade the RAM and pay more to get let's see, how much is 30? Does it jump from 32 to what?
128.
So you have to jump to 128. Mm-hmm. Which brings the price way up more than an attractive $329. Mm-hmm. So it's always something with Apple. There is this compromise you have to make. Yeah. So I'm kind of in a quandary right now about which one I'm going to get. This is a iPad I keep in my nightstand for nighttime reading and morning check of the weather and things like that. Mm-hmm. And
Wait a minute. You have a dedicated iPad for your nightstand?
Yes.
Why not put your main iPad on your nightstand?
Because my main iPad is a 12.9-inch iPad Pro.
And it's a nightstand.
And it's inside its case from OtterBox. It weighs a healthy 2.5-3 pounds. And it's big and it's bulky and it's hard to fit on the nightstand. And it's heavy on me when I'm laying on my back in bed, yeah, and I have this giant thing waiting on my chest.
Yeah.
So an iPad Mini is perfect for holding in your hand and doing a Kindle reading or checking the weather or checking Dilbert.
Makes sense.
So, but now I really don't know which one I want to get, and I'm going to write a article comparing the two. Maybe it'll clarify my thoughts. But it is a difficult decision.
See, for me, I think, as odd as this sounds, the tipping point would be the Apple Pencil, because I like the portability of the Mini, and the fact that the Mini can do that now would be an upgrade to the Mini that you have, because there was no iPad Pencil when you got that. Apple Pencil when you got that one. So the fact that I could use the pencil with it, and you know, I am not tied to a keyboard or a keyboard case. So I just use like a separate Bluetooth keyboard. So the keyboard that I already have is going to work with whatever iPad I want to, or whatever phone even that I want it to. So I have like the keyboard that I've used with all my stuff so far, by the way. I have tried a couple of keyboard cases, but mostly I just keep coming back to the Bluetooth keyboard that I have. And so for me, like getting the iPad Mini and being able to use the Apple Pencil with it and have it be faster and, you know, feel more current and not be offended that Apple thinks in 2019 that 32 gigabytes is an acceptable amount of storage. I feel like the Mini would be the winner for me. And I think it's.
Wait, but you can use the pencil on the new iPad.
Yeah, but I'm not giving that up by going by getting a new Mini. The Mini can do it now too, which would be an upgraded feature.
I think
if I had a Mini now.
I think if I had to make the decision right now, I'd buy the iPad Mini 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stay with what I have, because the other option would be to buy an iPad Pro for the nightstand, but that's a hefty amount of change.
Oh yeah.
So I think an iPad Mini 5 for $399 and 64 gig of RAM and an A12 processor is just a sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the A12 Bionic is a nice chip.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a lot of demo of it last year, I think, and it's pretty good.
I use some graphics intensive applications like Radar Scope and some other apps that really chew up memory. It takes forever for my iPad Mini 3 to bring up the Radar.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So yeah.
It would definitely get perkier, for sure.
Real weather radar is what I was trying to say. Yeah. So the iPad 8th generation is attractive maybe for schools, maybe for people who are very price conscious. It's $299 for education price, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's available starting September 30th. It has pencil support. So I think it's a pretty nice iPad for a student,
mm-hmm.
especially if you attach a keyboard. But that 32 gig of RAM, that's all irritating. One thing that's always intrigued me is how Apple can shave so much off of a product with so little RAM difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the difference in cost in an Apple between 32 gigabytes of RAM and 64 must be about $5.
It's mm-hmm. storage rather than RAM.
Storage. Sorry. Yep. Sorry.
So, but it is, you know, it's flash storage.
Flash
it's
storage.
It's almost RAM.
Yeah.
But they'll jump a machine from 32 to 64 gigabytes of RAM, which is cost them $5.
Storage.
And they'll say, "Oh, storage." And they'll say, "Oh, wow, it's got double the storage. We should charge them a lot for this difference."
Yeah.
Well, yeah. More specifically, Apple has figured out that we will pay that difference.
Yeah.
Yes. They have.
That Apple can, you know, give us the sort of minimum device. Minimum storage device mm-hmm. as the entry level, and that we will pay the money. We as Apple customers will pay that money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
because most people aren't doing any research, they have no idea how much flash RAM costs, and they're not thinking about the fact that Apple is really couching them on that storage difference.
That's
Apple has properly trained us. From their vantage point,
they can take that to the bank.
Yeah.
That psychology.
Now, yeah. I did go look because I was curious what sort of context we have for these. So we talked about, you know, the A10 chip and the A12 chip, and the A12 that's in the iPad Mini from earlier, the update to the iPad Mini from earlier this year, the fifth generation, that is the same processor that's in the iPhone XR. and I think the XS. And the A10 chip is from the iPhone 7. So the one they announced yesterday is using the same processor as an iPhone 7 and 7 Plus.
Okay, but all that in mind, the new iPad at $329 US for the retail price is a lot of technology for not a whole lot of money.
That's true.
Yeah, when you're the comparisons that y'all have made are all very appropriate and fantastic. I don't think most people would notice the processor difference in reality. I totally understand why John is interested in that difference. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that processor difference might likely make the iPad Mini 5 usable longer, maybe in a generation or two of iPad OS more than the A10.
Yeah.
But you are still getting a lot of technology, what seems to me to be a really high quality device for $329.
And I think it's going to go a long way.
32 gigs of storage.
I think it's going to go a long way, Brian, towards boosting iPad sales too. Because as we've talked about before on the show, when people walk into the store and they say, you know, I need a Mac Mini, and it's 2018 and the Mac Mini was last published in 2014. They go, I need a Mac Mini. And they don't really sit down and read about when the last Mac Mini was shipped. And they just say, you know, it's in the Apple store. It's for sale. It's right in front of me. And it has all these cool specs. I should just buy it because I need it. And I think the same thing will happen with this eighth generation iPad. People will wander into the store. Their daughter or son wants an iPad. And they look at the price and they don't really care whether it has an A10 or an A12. They just say, well, it's a beautiful, it's brand new. It's in the store. It's in my face. It's $329. The price is right.
Yeah.
Here's my credit card.
I'm not saying it's not right for some people, but I know that generally for people who are listening to our show, hi, listeners, you're fantastic. I think a lot of people probably hold with Brian's stance about, I don't want to pay 2019 money for 2017 tech.
Yep.
And that's where this comes out. And part of the reason that I wanted to make sure that context was out there was just to make sure that people doing it, you know, people who listen to our show, and then the people who call those people, you know, and ask them about, like, I heard there was an event yesterday and there are some new things and do I need to buy some stuff? Having that awareness to make sure that you know, like, this is what it is. And for some people, this will absolutely be the right device. I have a short list of people for whom the standard issue 329 iPad, even at 32 gigabyte. Yes, I personally am insulted by it, but I know people who will not care that it's 32 gigabyte or will be happy to spend the extra $100 to go to 128. So those are your two options on the new iPad. It's 32.
The problem is often 128. Apple doesn't often have the upgraded versions in the store. They typically have the base model. And so you'd have to go online and fuss.
Yeah. But I also know they are commonly available in other places once they're out. Once it's a thing that is easily obtainable, you know, Best Buy will have them in other places as well. So there are other purchase options available if you don't have an Apple store in your area where you can walk in and walk out with one. And one small thing that I noticed about looking all this stuff up today was that there's a bar at the top of like every page of new stuff that says trade in your eligible, whatever device page it is you're looking at, for credit toward a new one with Apple Trade-In. So this is something Apple's pushing pretty hard. I saw it on the iPad page. I saw it on the iPad mini page. I saw it on, I think, the Apple Watch page. And I know the phone was one that they highlighted yesterday.
You can get up to $110 by trading in your Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And I could sell my Apple Watch 4 for a lot more than $110.
Yes.
A lot more.
But a zero? Maybe not.
Yeah, but you're not getting $110.
But you're not getting $110 worth either.
It's up to $110.
But that's a thing that I noticed today that I only remember seeing as like a casual mention here and there. And this is now something that's across all the new pages. So I thought that was kind of notable. I do have people, like I said, that will be very happy with a new iPad if it's time for them to get upgraded. And there are a lot of people out there that the new iPad, not mini, but the new iPad at $329 or $429 is going to be a great device. And I'm not saying that it's not, But if you're a person trying to make a decision like John, I was thinking about getting a new Mini, but there's this new one from yesterday. The new one from yesterday is maybe not as new as you thought. So if you're looking for something that's going to be able to do something like, you know, weather radar and things like that, like, you may be better served with a little bit smaller screen. So,
well, I am going to get a new iPad, but my use case is fairly unique. The only reason why I need it is because I'm doing the iPad for Dummies update, and I need a naked device for screenshots.
Standard issue, sort of fresh out of the box kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I also need a device that's running iOS 12 so that I can be absolutely sure that iPadOS and the thing that I think is new or not new is new or not new.
Yes.
I need to be able to compare. So, and to me, I like the standard iPad size form factor more than the Mini size form factor, and that is an incredibly subjective thing.
Yes.
So I'm going to end up getting the new iPad.
All right. I'm not in line for a new iPad yet. I have a 10.5 Pro, and it makes me really happy, and I have no issues with it. And I looked at even the iPad Pro, which came out after mine, and the USB-C iterations, and went, that's really nifty, and left it at that. So far, I feel like I have a lot of mileage on mine yet, so I'm not quite there. We will find out what John ultimately decides and see what he has to say about it. John, I do look forward to your editorial on that.
Me too.
And I would like to thank both of you for being here today. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Yep, thanks for having us. Good discussion.
Glad to hear you talk about stuff. And John, like I said, I look forward to finding out what decision you make. But in the meantime, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. I will let you know that you can chat with us by emailing observations@macobserver.com. If you are, and by the way, thanks to Greg who did so and sent us a very entertaining cartoon. I would also like to point out that you can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.